Good morning. Welcome to Sunday and welcome to Bayview. I'm Nikki Thomas, and we have with us today the Executive Director of San Francisco Suicide Prevention. She's Eve Meyer. How are you today?
Very well. Thank you so much, Nikki.
Thank you for being with us. What important work you're doing.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Right. So San Francisco Suicide Prevention, something that's absolutely necessary in our communities. The title alone is very self-explanatory. We've all heard a bit about this organization. But, you know, let's get a little more specific in the things that you do at this place.
San Francisco Suicide Prevention is the oldest suicide hotline in the United States. We are about to celebrate our 50th birthday. We were the first place that people could actually call when they were suicidal. Nobody would talk to suicidal people in 1962 when we opened up, and we opened up a telephone line that people could call. Now, 200 people call every day, and they can also reach us by computer. We noticed that people who were younger didn't like using the telephone, so our website has a way that they can connect with us directly on their computers.
So it's a chat kind of a thing?
And they can chat.
Okay. Huh. You know, I love it when you say a whole lot in one sentence. let's start with you said 1962. And nobody would talk to suicidal people at that time.
At that time, at all. I was actually a social worker then, and we were told that suicidal people were too demanding, that they wanted to talk to you all day and all night, that they were angry, that they would make demands on you. And it turned out that's the perfect way to handle people is a volunteer line. Mm-hmm. Because if you come in and you work once a week as a volunteer for 4 hours, yes, people can call you 24 hours a day. Yes, they can get angry. Yes, they can be demanding, because people who are in emotional pain lose their social skills the same way that people who are in physical pain lose their social skills.
Right.
If you drop a brick on your foot, you're going to say, ow, 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 ow.
You're going to stop being polite, that's for sure.
You stop being polite. And if your heart breaks, people expect you to behave normally. And that's not fair. So we allow people to say, ow, ow, ow.
Mm. You know, this is very humbling. This is information, we've been speaking for just over 3 minutes here. But this is information that the average person might not have thought of, comparing the physical pain to the emotional pain and how they're the same thing and the reactions might be the same.
Our attitudes about emotional pain come from Western Europe, and we don't think it's real. So we don't know very much about it. We don't handle it very well. And for that reason, people don't get much help with it. And they don't get much support for it from their friends.
We're expected to ignore it if it happens to us.
We're expected to ignore it. How many times have you ever seen anybody say, take that stupid cast off your leg and let's go dancing?
When you put it that way. Yeah. That's interesting.
But people will tell you to stop being such a baby about all of this and get over it.
Right.
Get over it. And you can't.
That's an interesting way to think about it. I have a good friend who tells me that she has an issue grieving and that she's never done it before. So I can imagine that many people may have that issue, or when emotions overwhelm them, they don't know quite how to handle it.
There are emotions that behave all by themselves.
Oh.
They just come inside of you, and they have their own cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to adjust to it yourself and handle it yourself.
Mm.
And for people to tell you that you can get control over it, or how you should feel, how much it should affect you, doesn't work. And also, different people are made differently. Some people, things hurt a lot, and they can not tolerate it.
Right.
Some people, it just washes over them, and it doesn't hurt very much.
Mm-hmm.
I watch athletes who do things in the Olympics. I could never do it.
Right, of course.
Could never do it. Kick a soccer ball that far, it would kill me. I can't even stand having a hangnail for very long.
Interesting.
So people are different emotionally that way, too. And they need some way to talk to someone who can understand it. So we set it up so you have a perfect stranger who is just like you, a member of the community.
Right.
They're not a therapist.
Right.
They just live in the community.
Right.
And they may have gone through a crisis themselves,
mm-hmm.
or not,
mm-hmm.
but they'll listen to you.
Isn't that something? So, the next question here, for the folks who are just joining us, we're speaking to Eve Meyer. She's the executive director of San Francisco Suicide Prevention. And you guys have been around for a while, so you absolutely know what to do. And you have the crisis line where folks can call. Let's throw that out there before we continue.
We have a crisis line, and the number is 415-781-0500.
415-781-0500. So, you know, my next question is, what makes this so effective?
What makes this so effective is that people can find somebody who does not tell them what to do, who doesn't judge them.
Hmm.
If you think back on a crisis that you might have had in your life and the people you would have talked to about that crisis,
right.
The people you would have talked to would have been the people who would not have said to you, you know, you're doing all the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
They would have been the people who would have sat back and said, that really sounds like you're going through a lot.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds like most of what you need to do may be over here. This may be where you need to make your decisions.
Right.
And then leave the rest up to you. Let you come up with your idea for how to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the people you went to. So we train our volunteers to be the people you would have gone to in mm-hmm. your family, among your friends, the ones you would have trusted.
And you know, what's so, I don't want to get off track here, but what's so amazing is that the whole concept of judgment, we know how to do that very well in our society. And it seems like we never catch on that that is not how to get people to open up to you, just in daily life. You know, and I think probably when you said that, a lot of people latched right on to it, and you know exactly who to call that will know exactly what to say to you to make you feel better. And you know that if you call this person over here, they're going to say something that will make it all worse. It's the whole judgment thing. And it's not effective in dealing with other people.
And it doesn't even change them.
No.
It doesn't help them, and it doesn't change them. All it does is make you feel better because you judged them.
Oh, preach.
Yes.
Preach.
So what we do is we hunt for people who mm-hmm. will not tell people what to do.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So I would imagine there is a special type of training for the people that answer the phone when folks call this number.
People get 10 weeks of training.
Oh, see, that makes a huge difference. 10 weeks?
10 weeks of training in how to listen, because it's a real skill.
It is. You took the words out of my mouth. Listening is a skill. Not everybody can do it. Or you certainly just can't do it just off the street. So tell us a little bit about that, the training and what happens in this 10 weeks.
In those 10 weeks, people learn why people call,
mm-hmm.
what they're likely to hear, how they can respond to that, how they can resist judging it, and how they can resist saying, oh, I went through that in my life, and here's what you can do, because your life is not their life. Even if you came through a swamp and came out on the other side, the only thing you can do is transmit with your voice uh-huh. that it's possible to come out on the other side.
Right.
And we want people who have come out on the other side.
Uh-huh.
For goodness sakes, if you survived a crisis, pull somebody else through, but don't tell them what to do.
Uh-huh.
And don't tell them what you did, because all of a sudden it becomes your story and not their story. And that takes some training.
Yeah, that probably would be the first thing, because you thinking that if you identify, if they can identify with you, then, you know, maybe you're on the pathway here. But this is very informative, the way you're presenting this information. So that's just kind of another form of judgment when you jump in with the, oh, I went through that. Here's what I did.
When you say, I went through that, here's what I did, then the other person has to listen to you. And
flipping the script really quickly there.
Flipping it completely, and you're not helping them anymore.
Oh, boy.
But you're helping yourself. So it has to remain a situation where you're very focused on the other person, like radar.
Uh-huh.
Like laser.
Yeah.
And you learn to really focus like laser on another person whom you never see.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes all of your brain to really learn in a very short amount of time who that person is and what is the important thing that you can do to help them to come to an idea that they can enact in that short period of time.
Amazing, amazing. We're speaking to the executive director of San Francisco Suicide Prevention, Eve Meyer. She is here, and we're just talking about the folks that will pick up the phone if you are in need, if you call the crisis hotline, if you need some help. It is about prevention. That is the most powerful word here when you say prevention. So training, 10 weeks of training for the volunteers who participate. And also, I think it's important that we talk about, I'm looking on the website here, prevention strategies. We want to make sure that we get that in before, you know, because time flies when we start talking and we've got all this information. Warning signs. You know, I'm just kind of zeroing in on like the most important points or the most critical points of the list I see here. So, you know, because there might be someone listening who knows someone that is exhibiting these signs. Let's go through that and
there are three kinds of people who show warning signs. There are people who talk about the fact that they're actually feeling suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
Most of their friends don't believe them.
Well,
we're trained not to by our own backgrounds.
Right.
Right. So people will say, oh, you won't do that, or you'll never do that.
Mm-hmm.
Believe them.
Huh.
Believe them. Listen to them. Offer to get them help. Give them our phone number.
Hmm.
The second person knows that this is a big, big problem and a big question, and they don't feel confident that they're the right person to make the decision. They leave it to the universe. So they throw out a hint. They say, I wish I were dead. I wish I didn't have to wake up anymore. I wish this was all over with. When I'm dead, no one will miss me. And they see if anybody picks up the hint, and then they're meant to live. And if nobody picks up the hint, they're not meant to live.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hear somebody talking like that, you have to ask them if they're trying to tell you something about whether they're thinking of suicide, whether they're in a lot of pain, and whether that pain is making them think of suicide. Because you cannot put that idea into their heads.
Mm.
We used to believe you could. It's not true. You can't put it into their heads.
Mm.
And the third person, very similar to the second person, doesn't say anything. They act it out.
Mm.
They take high risks. They may change their habits and suddenly sleep all day or stop sleeping. Stop eating or start eating a lot, drop out of all their activities, disappear, stop coming to the things they're invited to, and change how they look and change how they act. And people don't ask, what is this change? What are you trying to tell me? Mm-hmm. And they are doing the same thing. They're trying to deliver a message, and they're waiting to see if the universe catches the message.
Mm. Okay.
And when that happens, get them in touch with us. Get them in touch with somebody. Listen to them. Find out what that pain is. And find out how you can get them to somebody else who will listen to them and find out how to help them.
Wow.
Very often, the people who are talking about suicide are young people.
Hmm.
And we're really concerned about young adults because they have, in San Francisco, there are 10 times as many deaths among young adults between 20 and 30 as among adolescents.
Hmm.
Everybody worries about teenagers, but 10 times as many people between the ages of 20 and 30 die from suicide.
Mm.
Everybody thinks they're happy because they're attractive, they're starting to work, they're in college, they look successful.
Right.
Nobody listens to them.
Hmm.
And so we've started a campaign of posters and announcements to try to get them to call us, especially chat on the computers, because they don't like the telephone. And they are the ones who are especially impulsive. The period of time between when they start thinking about suicide and when they may make a first attempt is often shorter than older people.
Amazing. Amazing. So if we see someone, if we know someone that's exhibiting signs similar to the ones that you've just spoken about, how do we help them? What do we do?
The first thing you do is you say, I'm worried about you.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're thinking of suicide, and I'd like to help.
Mm.
And you don't sound scared, and you don't sound judgmental like it's a bad, bad thing, because, in fact, there are twice as many suicides as homicides in the United States. And there are 50 people who make an attempt for every person who dies.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very common thing.
Right.
We just pretend it isn't. So you say, I'd like to help. Tell me what's going on. And tell me if you have a plan. Very important to find out if this person has made a plan yet. If the person has made a plan and they have a way of doing it, get them to somebody who's going to help them, a hospital, a therapist. Call us and find out where to get them. If they haven't made a plan yet, help them make an appointment to see a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
So that the pain goes away. The important thing about suicide is it's about pain. Nobody should hurt that much.
Mm. Interesting.
Nobody should hurt so much that they want to take their lives away to stop the pain.
Mm. We're speaking to Eve Meyer. She's the executive director of the San Francisco Suicide Prevention. We've talked a bit about the hotline, the training, and, you know, what to do if you know someone who's exhibiting the signs of, you know, wanting to or making an attempt towards suicide. So I'm looking on the website here. And let's talk a bit about the term depression. I just kind of zoomed through this really quickly here. And it is pretty confusing for people to understand what it is. So can we talk a bit about that?
Depression has been used a lot to describe feelings that overwhelm people. It often refers to a specific disease that is a brain disease that makes it very hard for people to think, move, act, focus, concentrate, and it's extremely painful. The people whom I know who have this find it very, very hard to function because they can't get out of bed in the morning. They can't quite get to work. They can't focus on anything when they're at work, and they have this tremendous sense all the time that they're worthless, they're taking up room, that they are a burden to other people, and it all tells them that they shouldn't be alive.
Hmm.
So the end stage of a lot of depressions can be suicide. Not all.
Mm-hmm.
But an untreated depression, and only about a third of them are treated. Only about a third of the people who have depression ever get it treated, because most of them think, well, that's just how I am. Or they think, that's just how other people are. People
right.
are picking on me.
Mm. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So when it's not treated, it can keep on progressing, and it can result in this. But when it's treated, when it's treated successfully, and it can be treated more successfully than heart disease.
Mm, really?
Really.
Wow.
Then you can avoid this. The biggest problem is getting people to a source of treatment and getting them to hang in there, because people don't bleed. Depression is a disease that doesn't have bandages, doesn't have blood, doesn't have casts. So no one believes that it's there. They just think the person is being annoying.
So what does treatment look like these days?
Treatment can look like a number of things. Treatment can be medical.
Mm-hmm.
Treatment can also be conceptual. There are therapists who can sit down with you and help you reform your thinking, so that when the ideas like I'm worthless, I can't focus, when those ideas begin to come to you, you can get control over them. And more therapists are starting to use the business of getting control of depressive ideas. And it's almost like when you go to the gym and you exercise your muscles so they get stronger, it's strengthening your mind so it battles the depression. And it forms new pathways that go around it and can make you function again.
Uh-huh.
So those are the advances in treating it. Sometimes they do both, medication and helping the person form new pathways, form a stronger mind that can control it.
Interesting. This is all wonderful information. Awareness. You know, probably there are some people who are instantaneously being helped by this information because they know what to do now, or they know what to look for if someone around them is exhibiting certain behaviors. And I think also a deeper understanding of depression and what it means. And because I think the confusion comes in because so many folks, day-to-day stress, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I think everybody goes through little lulls of feeling down or feeling overwhelmed. And there's, you know, a fine line sometimes. So I thank you for being so informative to everyone today.
I think the more we know and the more we are tolerant of each other's vulnerability to stress,
mm-hmm.
the better it is. And also, we have 100 volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
That's not enough. When somebody out in the community is also listening to their friends,
mm-hmm.
when we listen to our family, we're an extension of us.
Right.
And we need everybody to take care of each other and to be an extension, and not to be afraid to ask about suicide, not to be afraid to put your arms around someone and say, I care about you. I know this is a tough time. I know you will come out of it. And it's okay if you hurt right now.
Mm.
It's
wow.
okay to hurt.
So we spoke a bit about the volunteers. If we want to participate, if we want to support this organization through volunteer work, how do we start that process?
How you start that process is you can go to our website, mm-hmm. sfsuicide.org. The SF is for San Francisco.
Right.
And you can file an application right on the website to be a volunteer. We love volunteers. We also have outreach volunteers who go around and leave off material in coffee houses, schools, agencies, so that people will know we exist, know what the number is,
right.
Know that they can call 7810500 anytime, and who go and do trainings in high schools and colleges so that other people are an extension of us. We want as many people as possible to be our hands and fingers in the community.
Right, and I'm sure there's lots of different positions. If you call and say, hey, I want to donate some time, I'm sure you will just put them to work in some fashion.
They can donate time in any way that they want to. They can donate money by texting the word TALK to 20222 on their cell phones. They can help us with special events when we have a dinner. They can help us get prizes for our silent auctions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a million different ways to help a nonprofit, and we're one of the smallest nonprofits. We have 10 staff members and 100 volunteers, but we get about 60,000 calls a year for about 10,000 people. So we're kind of like a spider web.
Wow. So lots of information here. If you or someone you know is in crisis, this is the important number here, 415-781-0500. That is the number that, you know, I guess we should all keep handy so that, you know, it's there. And if we know someone that needs it, if we need it, it's very important to know. 415-781-0500. If you're interested in volunteering, if you want to help this organization, I'm sure donations are always a good thing as well. You can go to the website, sfsuicide.org, sfsuicide.org, to find out all the information that you need. The website here is full of great information, and it's wonderful to be aware not only of the prevention strategies and things like that, but also aware of the wonderful work that this organization is doing in our community. San Francisco Suicide Prevention Executive Director Eve Meyer, is there anything else you wanted to let us know about before we wrapped up today?
Thank you so much. I just appreciate the fact that we've been able to talk about it, and I look forward to hearing from everybody who's interested.
Absolutely. As I said, when we started, you're doing important work here in our community. Thank you so much. Once again, Eve Meyer, Executive Director of San Francisco Suicide Prevention, sfsuicide.org. The crisis line is 415-781-0500, and we thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'm Nikki Thomas. This is Bayview. KBLX, Berkeley, San Francisco, Oakland, San Jose.